Albus Benedictine. A performance so horrible that when old Lady Startup saw it, which she did on one fatal New Year's Eve in the year 1764, she went off into the most piercing shrieks, which culminated in violent apoplexy, and died in 3 days after disinheriting the Canterfills, who were her nearest relations, and leaving all her money to her London apothecary. At the last moment, however, his terror of the twins prevented his leaving his room, and the little Duke slept in peace under the great feathered canopy in the royal bedchamber, and dreamed of Virginia. A few days after this, Virginia and her curly-haired cavalier went out riding on Brockley Meadows, where she tore her habit so badly in getting through a hedge that on her return home she made up her mind to go up by the back staircase so as not to be seen. As she was running past the tapestry chamber, the door of which happened to be open, she fancied she saw someone inside, and thinking it was her mother's maid, who sometimes used to bring her work there, looked in to ask her to mend her habit. To her immense surprise, however, it was the Canterville ghost himself. He was sitting by the window, watching the ruined gold of the yellowing trees fly through the air, and the red leaves dancing madly down the long avenue. His head was leaning on his hand, and his whole attitude was one of extreme depression. Indeed, so forlorn and so much out of repair did he look, that little Virginia, whose first idea had been to run away and lock herself in her room, was filled with pity, and determined to try and comfort him. So light was her footfall, and so deep his melancholy, that he was not aware of her presence till she spoke to him.
"I am so sorry for you," she said. "But my brothers are going back to Eton tomorrow, and then, if you behave yourself, no one will annoy you."
"It is absurd asking me to behave myself," he answered, looking round in astonishment at the pretty little girl who had ventured to address him. "Quite absurd. I must rattle my chains and groan through keyholes and walk about at night, if that is what you mean. It is my only reason for existing."
"It is no reason at all for existing. And you know you've been very wicked. Mrs. Umney told us the first day we arrived here that you had killed your wife."
"Well, I quite admit it," said the ghost petulantly. "But it was a purely family matter and concerned no one else."
"It is very wrong to kill anyone," said Virginia,
who at times had a sweet Puritan gravity, caught from some old New England ancestor.
"Oh, I hate the cheap severity of abstract ethics. My wife was very plain, never had my ruffs properly starched, and knew nothing about cookery. Why, there was a buck I had shot in Hoghly Woods, a magnificent picket, and do you know how she had it sent to table? However, it is no matter now, for it is all over, and I don't think it was very nice of her brothers to starve me to death, though I did kill her."
"Starve you to death? Oh, Mr. Ghost, I mean, Sir Simon, are you hungry? I have a sandwich in my case. Would you like it?"
"No, thank you. I never eat anything now, but it is very kind of you all the same. And you are much nicer than the rest of your horrid, rude, vulgar, dishonest family."
"Stop!"
cried Virginia, stamping her foot.
"It is you who are rude and horrid and vulgar. And as for dishonesty, you know you stole the paints out of my box to try and furbish up that ridiculous bloodstain in the library. First you took all my reds, including the vermilion, and I couldn't do any more sunsets. Then you took the emerald green and the chrome yellow. And finally I had nothing left but indigo and Chinese white, and could only do moonlight scenes, which are always depressing to look at, and not at all easy to paint. I never told on you, though I was very much annoyed. And it was most ridiculous, the whole thing. For